Gaming Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Controlling transmission.
Divided by a thousand miles of barren wasteland, two men mysteriously linked by alien technology on a podcasting mission to boldly deliver video game news and views directly to your brain. This is Gaming Uncensored. Now, your Gaming Uncensored guides, the dynamic duo, the video game gurus, a man on wheels, and a Yeti with a modem, Jamie and Tommy.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. How you doing? My name is Jamie Jordan, and this is the 501st episode of Gaming Uncensored. I don't know how many episodes I'm going to do that, but that's a big number. And of course, Tommy's sitting over there. What's up, man?
It is a big number. I'm proud of that. Like, getting over that 500 hump, like, now we're at, like, the half of a century. Like, that's a big deal.
Can I tell you something? What made me the most proud, and it's insane to think of this, but I sent, before I put the 21st anniversary thing up, I sent it to my mother and said, hey, what do you think of this? And she was like, that's really cool. And then I put it on Instagram. I don't know if you saw it. Yeah. But she actually commented.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah,
because our families normally act like they don't know us, and so that really made me happy, and it's kind of one of those, we've been doing this a long time. I'm glad there's still people paying attention.
Yeah, for sure. We appreciate it also. 521 years of doing this, which is just insane to say. Just a crazy stupid thing to say, but here we are 21 years later after we originally started this, so it's pretty cool. We're not gonna linger on it very long, but take a moment. Pretty cool.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Yep. Otherwise, things are good. We got lots of games to talk about. So I don't know if we're going to banter much here at the beginning, because we got to get into games we played, games that we're going to play, games that we may not play because of things happening in the industry. So we've got lots to cover. First, big shout out to the Patreon supporters: Cabbage, Jose, Narc, Duff, Josh, Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavosh, Chad, Zeke, Chris, Brigham, Sam, Andrew, Luik, Logan, Liz, Jordan, Gio, and Derek. As always, if you'd like to support us on Patreon, we would appreciate it a ton. You can go to gaminguncensored.com, click that Become a Patron link. Give us some money. Help us play more games. Help us pay for all the stuff that goes into this show. We're just talking about a couple of things that we need to do that cost money and support the show. And so we appreciate so very much whatever you give, whatever you can give. If you can't give and just want to listen to the show, we appreciate that too. That's fantastic. No pressure ever, obviously, to give. But I've listened to podcasts all the time. We have been ad supported a couple times in the history of this show. But for the most part, we just do it based off of what we get from you guys and what we have to chip in, and we have fun doing it. And so we are incredibly grateful for that. 500 plus shows at this point, so thank you.
If somebody wants to give us a boatload of money to run ads, we'll totally do that.
But absolutely, we've done it before.
I totally love the fact that this show is basically ad free, and yes. I would like to keep it that way if we can. But hey, if somebody gives us a boatload of money to hawk their stuff, we 100%. Totally will.
For sure. So, other.
That's not good. Okay. Uh-oh. Technology. I'm good. I'm good. I just got to make sure I got click the right button here. Let's see. Let's not click the wrong button. Okay, I think we're okay.
Pressure's on. It's always fun at the beginning of the podcast when your co-host goes, uh-oh.
Try to move the mouse stealthily. Can you see this? Okay, cancel.
If you are... If you're new to Gaming Uncensored, we don't like to edit, so you get all this.
No, this is what we do, because we don't edit at all, and it's a horrible way to run a podcast, but we're lazy.
We are. We're busy. We got stuff to do, so here we are. So, all that being said, we've got a state of play to talk about. We've got big Microsoft news to talk about. We've got some games to talk about. Should we just jump in?
Let's do it.
Talk about games. I gotta mention, we're gonna talk about Blueprints here in just a second. But I gotta mention, because I forgot to do this on the last show, because we talked about so much other stuff on the last show. I think, at least I remember at this point, but there's a game I beat with the little girl. Genevieve and I finished It Takes Two.
Believe it or not,
finally, it took us like 2 years to get through that game. I think she was 5 when we started. She just turned 8 last week. So it took us a while to get through It Takes Two, just playing whenever we could. But we did it and have already started Split Fiction. And so we are into Split Fiction. I will try to put that up sometime. It's pretty cool. It is the kind of tonal shift from It Takes Two to Split Fiction for a 7 going on 8 year old.
Yeah.
It is a little more adult. They're both rated teen. They both have a little bit of language, which she gets a kick out of every time. But Split Fiction, definitely a little more like just violent. Yeah. Like it just has a little bit more. It's still over the top and ridiculous and all that kind of stuff. But there have been more moments in it where she's like, oh, that's different. And I'm like, yeah, sure is. You know, as my parental duties go on. It's not bad by any means. But yeah. Definitely has some language. Definitely has some violence that is more realistic than what anything in It Takes Two was. But It Takes Two, honestly, was a lot heavier. Like, subject wise, because like the whole premise is like a mom and dad that are planning to get divorced and the kid that's in the center of it and them like reconciling through becoming these dolls or whatever. But like at the core of the whole story is divorce,
right?
Which is pretty heavy topic for a 7-year-old. And so Split Fiction in some ways isn't nearly as like psychologically demanding in that way, because we're not dealing with like this heavy, like real topic. It's a little more abstract in like these, you know, fictional worlds of these authors and them trying to navigate their way. Anyway, they're both fantastic. We've talked about Joseph Ferris and all that in the past, and good games, fun stuff, and just, you know, that kind of co-op thing, to be able to do that with my daughter is super cool.
So it's a huge
I just
deal.
Had to mention that.
Huge deal, and I'm very jealous. And I'm very curious, because this is your thing and her thing, and I know mom jumps in there on occasion, but as you might know from listening to this show for 21 years, video games aren't really her thing. No. She tolerates it and plays a little bit because of this show, but it's not really her thing. And so that's very much a daddy-daughter kind of a deal. And I think that's really interesting, especially when you're playing something that's got some language or some maybe not so appropriate stuff.
For sure.
Yeah.
She's at the age where we're just navigating that in general around music as well, because she's getting into all kinds of music, and some of which we got to go, that's a little too much on the language. You know, just conversations you have as kids get older. But
yeah,
she, I also mentioned, just because we do, you know, play other stuff together, like Mario Kart. Mario Kart's kind of our family go-to game when we want to play something all together. And she did, for the first time, I believe this was over Christmas break, but we had big snow ice storm a month ago. I think it was during that, actually. She, for the first time, legit won a race. Like, beat me, beat the sexy psychic, who's actually not terrible at Mario Kart. Is pretty, like, respectable at Mario Kart. Beat all the PC characters, obviously. Like, legit got first place in a race. It was a big deal. Like, she had not done that before. And so she is, like, getting to the point where she's not just, like, oh, this is fun pressing buttons and seeing stuff move on the screen to like, oh, I could actually do this. And like, yeah, she can navigate and all that stuff. And so it's cool to see a proud dad moment. So
yeah, absolutely.
The other game we'll spend a little bit more time talking about because it's fascinating. Blueprints, which was nominated for a handful of different things. I believe one best indie game, something like that, at Game Awards, but just popped up on my radar because of that, and then popped up on Game Pass. And so when there's a game that is kind of on my radar that pops up on Game Pass, I'm going to download it and try it. I went into Blueprints knowing basically nothing. If you want to go into Blueprints and you haven't played it yet, knowing basically nothing, you should fast forward a little bit because we will give away at least some of the premise of the game, of how the game works and that kind of stuff here, which there is something fun to coming into it completely unaware. There's also a lot of benefit to knowing a little bit about what it is, what you're trying to do.
That's what I was about to say. I think, and this is just me, from a guy that... We've both been doing this show for 21 years. We've been playing games for way longer than that. And you talk a lot about playing games naturally. As I get older, it doesn't matter what I play. I'm going to do some research.
Yeah.
And I have played a few hours of Blueprints, and I'm going to tell you, I think the research was absolutely necessary just to find out about the coat check and various things and how you store items. And like, I think there's some stuff that you need to know unless you just want to walk into it completely blind, which if you do, I totally understand.
So let me give a little background for anybody who's unfamiliar with Blueprints at this point, which may be a lot of people because it's not the biggest, most well-known game out there for sure. It is a deep puzzle game. So if puzzle games aren't your thing, like, go ahead and move on. This is not going to be your thing, more than likely. It's a deep puzzle game. I compared it kind of to Myst, like in that level
and
of puzzle solving. So if you didn't like Myst, which is kind of our classic anchor point for this kind of game, you probably won't like this. If you love Myst, you may or may not like this because it doesn't play like Myst, but it's that same kind of really deep, multiple puzzles, exploring, failing a lot, trying to figure out what's going on, all that kind of stuff. But the way the game actually works, like the very, again, this is very light spoiler. You find all this stuff out very early in the game. The kind of premise is you have inherited this manor, but the manor's floor plan changes each day by kind of how you build it out. So you kind of walk into the entry hall of the manor. There's three doors. You get to go to each door. When you open a door, you choose the next room that is going to be populated on the map. And each room has its own little characteristics. Some of them have puzzles inside of them. Some of them have hints about puzzles inside of other rooms. But like, the whole thing works together in this kind of synergetic way. But you can run into dead ends because some rooms don't have any doors. Some rooms only have one door. Some rooms have lots of doors.
Like,
so
the closet's a great example of that. Like,
yeah,
the closet, you get two items. There's no way. That's it. Like, you have to.
But it has no doors or anything. Yeah. And so you have to be very strategic in kind of where you place stuff. And then when you run out of places to build, you end the day. And then you start over the next day. Everything is wiped out and you build again. It's also a little bit roguelite in that there are certain things that can be permanent upgrades, and there are certain things that can go kind of from day to day. And so as soon as you start getting deeper and deeper into it, you start figuring out like how to strategically think toward the next day or two down the road. But at any case, like, you're always starting from almost beginning state when you go back. And so this is where it gets into the really, like, where it speaks to me and is kind of my nerdiness, and where it may turn off everybody else really quick when I say this. I started a Google Doc to keep notes of this, and my Google Doc is now at 13 pages long of trying to like make notes on all the different rooms of like the different things that are in them and all that kind of stuff. And as you kind of build it out, you start learning different things. You start learning the mechanisms. You start getting the story element, because at the beginning, it doesn't really give you a whole lot of story. But you start getting little bits and pieces of this world, who this uncle, I think his uncle,
yeah,
that left
uncle,
you this manor.
Yes.
Like about his life, about his connection to this world that is inhabited. There's like this multiple countries and there's conflicts that come into it, and all this kind of stuff that is both interesting and also like not core to figuring out the puzzle. So some of it is, I won't say it that way, but anyway, there's a lot of lore and there's a lot of puzzle, and there's some places where those overlap and there's some places where those don't overlap. And part of the trick of the game is trying to figure out what is important and what's not important.
And can I say that it's not obvious? Let me just give an example of one room that I struggle with every time it comes up, which is the storage room, because there's not, at least I haven't had it drawn where there is an active puzzle in there, but yep. There's usually a picture or something that yep. corresponds to an active puzzle. And so, and the thing is, like you're talking about, redraw every day, and so if you don't write down what is in that room on that particular day and you forget, when you have the option to complete the puzzle, so to speak, you have to remember
yep.
what you saw and when, why it fits with this puzzle. And this is going to sound really funny, but what this game is, this game was built for somebody who got mono and can't go anywhere for like 6 weeks. Like,
it really,
that's what it is.
That is the ideal like way if you could play this game. It's just when like there you can't do anything else because you can kind of immerse yourself in it. You're not forgetting those little things. The other thing I've mentioned, my 13 pages of notes. I also have a whole folder of screenshots on my computer.
Yeah.
Because there's like books, and you don't know what part of the book when you're flipping through the book in game is going to be important. And so I just took screenshots of every page and I could go back.
You should upload that folder. I use that crap. I will probably use that crap.
It is, yeah. And then, like, you find out, like, at different points in the game, like, you're like, oh, I think I figured out something that's really important. I'm following it. And then, like, there's one specific, I won't give it away, but there was one specific point where, like, later in the game, you get a letter, like, you find a letter written to the player character that's like, oh, by the way, I hope you didn't think this specific thing was important because it's really not. And I'm like, I spent like 3 hours writing those down. Like, what are you talking about? This isn't important. Like, they don't mean anything. But like, right. Stuff like that, that there's these, you know, like things that are trying to throw you off the scent and all that. Anyway, it's a really fascinating game. There's zero action to it. There is nothing that requires there is one thing that is time dependent that I can think of in the whole game that you actually, and I haven't done it yet.
Well,
that I just know about because I happened upon it and went, oh, that's not going to work. That is the only thing in the entire game that has like any like need for doing anything quickly. The rest of the game is just like looking around and observing stuff or whatever and trying to solve these puzzles. And I will freely admit I have gone and found tons of hints and a couple of solutions when I have gotten stuck at dead ends because it just is super deep. Some stuff is not obvious. And then when you hear it, you're like, oh, yeah. Oh, I never figured that out. And you know, and so, like, I don't feel bad about getting solutions to stuff I would have never figured out. But I've also figured out a ton of stuff in the game, and that makes you feel, you know, really accomplished and all that kind of stuff to, like, go, oh, yeah, I know what I'm doing, and I figured this out. I know.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool because the rooms intermingle with each other,
mm-hmm.
and lots of, like, I've gotten the observatory a couple times. I had to figure out how do you figure out which star you have for that day and what mm-hmm. that means and various things. And so it's really cool. But we were talking before we fired up the mics, this is not a game that I want to play every day. Like, yeah. I'm really frustrated with myself because if there was ever a cripple-friendly game, this is it. Like,
yes.
This is it. I should be playing the crap out of this. But it's very weird in that I have to be in the right headspace to play this. It's not like playing Expedition 33 or playing Dispatch or like you have to be in the right headspace to play this.
For sure.
Well, I should ask. I mean, do you feel the same way? Have you sat down and been like, eh, I don't know.
I really haven't because it's about the only thing I've played for the last 2 weeks, and I've been able to get through most of the game in that time in the fairly limited time that I have for gaming. And so it's also once you start like piecing this stuff together and get some momentum going, it starts moving a little quicker. I will say it is a slow burn, especially at the beginning, especially if you don't have any direction. There's a great Reddit thread that I found that kind of says, try to accomplish this, and it gives you some hints, and everything is, behind a blackout that you can click on for spoilers and that kind of stuff. And so it just kind of nudges you in the right direction. After I played it for like 10 or 15 in-game days and was kind of chasing my tail, I was like, I just need something that's pointing me where I need to go. And a couple of things I was like, oh yeah, I know that. And a couple other things were like, oh, I didn't realize that was a thing at all. And so that helps a lot of just having that little nudge, because it makes you feel like you're making progress. Because that's where I kind of got stuck a couple of times. I was like, am I really going to play this longer? You wasn't in that headspace. It's right. Just what I was stuck. But getting over that for me helped me keep going with it. It is very much a slow burn. And so if you're looking for something to like just like need to get some action with, go pick up something else for a little bit and come back to. I did that today. I picked up something else for a little bit this morning and came back will come back to Blueprints to try to finish the last big puzzle in the game. But that's, it does require you to be at a certain place. But my kind of prime gaming time at this point is in the evenings when I'm kind of winding down. And it works really well for my headspace in that moment. So like it's a good like just like not because it's requires a lack of focus, because it's definitely not that. It requires a ton of focus. But it requires focus on something I haven't been focusing on all day, right? Like it's completely detached from work, from kids, from bills, from whatever, like all the other things I've just dealt with for 12 hours, like it's like, I could completely drop all that stuff and just think about weird pictures on the walls and what this puzzle means and how it connects to this thing over here or whatever. And like it's not turning your brain off, it's redirecting your brain in a way where you can't worry about other stuff.
And I think you hit on a key there, because I have also played it at night. What couple of hours that I've played it, I've also played it at night, because I don't think that this is a game that you can play a little bit and then go deal with your kids or go deal with your job or pay your bills or whatever. Like, you're not going to get anywhere. It literally is, you sit and this is all you do. Put your phone down, turn everything else off, because it's going to require your entire brain, and you can't really turn it on in the middle of the day if you've got other stuff.
The one thing I will mention that's a frustration point that I don't have a good solution to, but we were kind of mentioning just a little bit off mic beforehand, it is random. So there are a bunch of different rooms that you can draw each day. Some of them are available, some of them aren't each day. That's all based on random number generators. And so there was a puzzle that I was trying to complete that I knew I needed the office, one of the rooms that you can draft. And I just had never seen it. And I'd played 20 plus in-game days. And I'm just like, where is the office? I'd have never seen it. It's never popped up. Like there's a directory of every room you've seen that you can reference, and it just isn't there. And I'm like, all I need is this office to solve this puzzle, because I know like that the last little key is in there, and the game kind of points you to, that you need to get something in that room, and it just never popped. And I was like, maybe I'm wrong. Like maybe this room just doesn't exist. Like I was just getting super frustrated about it. And finally it popped up, and now it's popped up a billion times after it popped up that first time, because it is that random number generator thing. Like you can just get bad luck and you can like have a plan and things just don't work out. And I went through a period where I was about ready to just toss the thing out the window, because like I knew I needed that. And that was like the next thing for me to get momentum moving forward. And sure enough, once that happened, like almost the rest of the game kind of fell in place, and I was able to get to the credits relatively shortly after that. But it took that happening, and again, that was all just kind of random chance, more or less, of whether or not this room pops up. So there is a little bit of, like, you can even know what you're doing and still get screwed by it and not have any control over that, and that kind of sucks. But it's all in all, like, still just a fun, enjoyable experience if you like a deep puzzler.
And I have to just say one more quick thing. The thing that I appreciated about it is that I have a couple of games, really just one, in Cyberpunk that live on my system. It doesn't matter what happens, it's not going anywhere. One thing I can say about this one is it's going to live on my system because it's like 4.5 gigs. Like,
yeah.
It's going to be one of those that's just always kind of there,
yeah.
I think. And when I get in the mood to tackle it, now I have your notes, and you like, I can add notes and
yep,
and whatnot. And so I think it's going to be one of those that is just on my system perpetually,
yeah.
Because it's small. Like, it's... And I sent you another one of those that Sam sent to us. I don't know if you had time to fire that up or not, but that's it's also small, and that one's freaky.
Yes, that one is.
So yeah, those ones like that, that especially for blueprints, it's a perpetual type game because.
Yeah.
I don't even really know if you get to the end after the credits, if the game ends. It seems like one of those that just sort of keeps running.
Yeah, the biggest puzzle of the game is post-credits.
Yeah.
Because I've hit the credits, and like, that is, I would say, like, the credits are like the halfway point of the game.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's another set of credits when there's like... After you get through that, you to get to the credits, you find something that like has obvious like, oh, this is going to be next. And then the credits roll and you go, nope, I got to go back and do that thing that I just saw because of how I got here. And that is like just a whole nother branch of the game, essentially. And so there's, I would say, probably about as much post credits as there is before the credits of the game. The credit, like that ending is satisfying and you feel like you've accomplished something. But the fact that you have to go through like I'm assuming that it's the kind of final puzzle of the game to get that. And so it teases it to you is genius because I was like, hurry up, credits. I want to go back and see what that was. You know,
right.
Like it just had me already rehooked to go back in. So,
yeah.
Yes, there is a massive amount of content after the credits. So there is, I'm not telling you what any goals are because that's part of the fun of figuring out what the purpose of the game is. But once you figure out like what seems like the big goal and then that turns into a different puzzle, like it's rewarding. And so it's just a cool, interesting game. So
very cool.
All that said, we need to talk about other games because we've got lots of other games and news to talk about. So let's shift over to that. We'll start with Sony State of Play. It happened about a week and a half ago now. It's been a little bit. Was dense.
Yeah.
Was an hour of a lot of games. They squeezed in so many games to this thing. A lot of it wasn't super newsy. There's a couple of really newsy things that came out of it. A lot of it was games I'm honestly pretty excited about, and so there's some really good stuff in here. We're not going to talk every single thing that they mentioned, but we'll mention a few. It showed off more of the 007 game that's coming, and I hope it's good.
Man, I really do hope it's good. I'm like, please, please,
yeah.
Please don't suck.
Yeah,
please don't suck.
I really want it to be good. We saw a little bit more For Loop, which I'm not convinced is good.
No,
still. Like,
I'm like, I saw that and the guy's talking about it and he's all excited. I'm like, nope.
I appreciate you trying to sell us on it, and it feels very much like they're trying to sell us on it. But Bad Robot, whatever. I don't know. I want it to be good, but it's just not my thing, and that's part of why it doesn't really speak to me. One that does look pretty cool, Castlevania Belmont's Curse.
Yeah.
So we get a new side-scrolling Castlevania. We talk about Metroidvanias a lot on this show, in part because I love that genre, but I know you do too. Grew up playing Metroid and Castlevania. I've always been much more a Metroid part of the Metroidvania franchise. I played Castlevania when I was younger, obviously.
I played a ton of it when I was younger.
But I haven't for a long time. I really haven't touched Castlevania in years. And I saw this and went, I think that's how they get me. I'm going to be back in it because it looks really cool.
The last thing that I think we played, and I think you'll agree with this, is Symphony of the Night. Seriously. And that was, 20 years ago.
At least.
So I feel the same way. And the funny thing about it is that I don't really understand why, other than that's a piece of my childhood.
Yeah.
Specifically, Castlevania 2. I spent a ton of time running around there and trying to figure out how do you get across the river and all the things. And I think a lot of it is nostalgia, probably the same with Metroid. We're going to talk about something in a little bit, something new going on with God of War that kind of has the same sort of a feeling. Like, I want to play that because it reminds me of the stuff that we grew up on.
Yeah. Yeah. Since you mentioned that, I'll mention that next. A couple of God of War announcements. One was that there is a remake of the God of War original trilogy coming.
Right.
Which is interesting. They didn't show any of it.
No.
You just get this little teaser of the 1, 2, and 3 and then God of War trilogy remake, whatever. And so I really wanted to see what they're working on because this is my thing. Like, I loved the God of War games when they originally came out because they were just stupid hack and slash games. And now we have the new era of God of War, which are really legit, deep, fascinating, just great games. I don't know if those first three are going to hold up,
I don't really think they are. I think it's mostly nostalgia.
Yeah. And so I kind of need to see what they're doing with it, how they've made it, both in gameplay and content. I don't know that you're making it any more narrative based like they've made the newer ones. That's what makes the newer ones so great. I don't know if they're going to do that. But the other thing they announced, which is already out, announced and released same day, was a side-scrolling God of War game called Sons of Sparta, Sons of Sparta, that you could go pick up right now. I haven't picked it up yet. I need to. But it's kind of Metroidvania-ish. They, I think, called it a Metroidvania. It looks like it may be that kind of thing. It looks like it's probably kind of mid-Metroidvania, but it's God of War in that kind of style, and so that's kind of fascinating. And so I do plan on playing it. It's on PlayStation 5, and so that may be even today the next thing I pick up.
If we could stream at least some of that, I would.
For sure. And it's got decent reviews. Not great, not terrible. So we also saw Death Stranding 2 coming to the PC, and so a lot of details about that on PC, including I noticed something that I would love to see on your end is the widescreen support, the ultra widescreen support for it, which would be
I will say that that's one of the things that I love about the original Death Stranding. It looks ridiculously good on this monitor.
Yeah.
And it's one of the only games that I have. Even Cyberpunk doesn't have full support for ultra widescreen. It's in the game, but when you get in the menus, you get that weirdness. Death Stranding has full support, and it is amazing. I'm excited about that, but Let's talk about something real quick that's off the side that I don't know that we have included in the show notes. And that is that AI has stolen all of our graphics cards. So you can't get a graphics card anyway, anywhere. I've told you this, but Evie is still having technology issues with her new rig, and we're afraid it may be the graphics card. I'm thinking not, but
yeah.
I told her, I was like, there's not another one of those. So when I was watching this, and they're like, Death Stranding 2 coming to the PC, and there's some Metal Gear stuff that we may or may not talk about in a minute. My immediate thought was, great. Does anybody have the hardware to run it? Right. Like, because you can't get a graphics card.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the interesting thing to me. Like, I'm happy that Death Stranding 2 is out and is coming to the PC. But, like, when's somebody going to have the hardware to run it?
That's fair. We got the hardware news we may or may not get to today, but we'll get to soon because it relates to that for sure. That is an interesting complication of the current state of video game hardware. There is a lot of demand for this technology, and there is not enough supply. And so that is creating both shortages and price issues and all that kind of stuff. So, but it looks gorgeous and would be super fun on a PC. So there's a John Wick game that we saw some of. That, of course, it's just like, it's John Wick. What's not to love
about
that?
I'm all about that.
Super violent and just great. And so, yeah.
Here's what I want to know. Here's what I'm like. I don't believe anything that I see right now because a trailer's a trailer. It looks great. Right. Awesome. Whatever the gameplay looks like. John Wick, I'm excited about that. Kind of reminds me of like a Win Back or something like that from way back in the day. But the thing that intrigued me is that at the end of the trailer, John turns around and looks at the camera and what appears to be Keanu just says, yeah. And I'm like, okay, is that him or is that Troy Baker or somebody doing his voice?
I had the same question. I both find it super hard to believe and would not be at all surprised if they got Keanu Reeves to do it. Because the fact that they didn't say we got Keanu Reeves and the fact that all you hear is the one word from him makes me go, oh, they got a really good voice actor.
Or they got AI,
which is a whole other conversation. We will have a little bit of here in a little bit. We'll have more forever because it's forever. So, Metal Gear. You mentioned Metal Gear. We have the Master Collection Volume 2, which is Metal Gear Solid 4. So the kind of remaster of that, which is a great game. Not one that I have to go back to.
Well, see.
Go watch it on YouTube because you get about the same experience.
I was so about cinematics. To ask, did you ever, because we both own it.
Yeah.
Did you ever finish it?
Yeah. Okay. Definitely finished it.
We didn't. Man, I don't think we finished it together.
We may not have because it was, yeah.
I've seen a chunk of it, but I don't think I've seen it all the way through. And that is one that I want to go back to because, honestly, if we're being real serious, that's kind of the end of the Solid franchise. I mean, I know we have 5, but that's a whole other timeline and things and whatever. And so I was thinking as I was watching this last night, because I'm behind, and you said, hey, go watch this. So I parked myself in front of it. I was thinking to myself, I need to like go back to this or watch it on YouTube in the highest resolution possible or something.
Yeah.
Because that out of everything that I saw Metal Gear wise, I'm like, That I really need to go back to.
Yeah, it's really great. It's just so much cinematics. It's so heavy. It's the highest cinematic game, I believe, in the Metal Gear franchise, which is saying a lot because they like their cinematics. But would be great. PSP game, Peace Walker, right?
Peace Walker, yes.
Is included in that as well. As well as one called Ghost Babel, which I don't even remember, but it supposedly was the series' first portable title, so whatever. But Peace Walker is one I've never played, and so that one is the one that's most intriguing to me because I kind of like to play it. I love Metal Gear. We've talked about Metal Gear for the entirety of this show. One of the things that you and I bonded over 23 years ago, or whatever, we started hanging out and conceptualizing this, or whatever. And so, yeah, that would be fantastic. By the way, just to verify, going back a second, Keanu Reeves is indeed voicing the John Wick video game.
See, so, I love that. That's That's what I was going to bring up. Like, he is, say whatever you want about Keanu Reeves at this point, but if it's a character that he's invested in, and I happen to know that he's invested in John Wick because of all of the training and all of the stuff that he did for the movies, like that wasn't a small thing. If it's a character that he's invested in, he's solid gold. I mean, Johnny in Cyberpunk is one of the most well-done characters anywhere. And so I'm really excited if he is voicing John Wick.
Yeah.
Like, that makes me go, okay, maybe we got something here. Because if there's anybody that knows what John Wick needs to be, it's that guy.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Agreed. 100%. There was a handful of other things. We saw some of New Resident Evil and some of New Silent Hill, so they squeezed those in there. A pod racing Star Wars game.
Yeah.
Like, where did that come from?
I think we saw that at
maybe so
E3 or somewhere a year ago.
Rayman 30th edition, because we're getting old, all these games that we do when we were young are now old. A new Kena game, which the first one apparently is pretty good. They're very pretty. It looks like something I would like.
I was actually thinking that, though, that series, that may be one that you want to play with your daughter.
Yeah.
And if you do, you need to stream that, because I'd like to see that.
Yep. For sure. Darwin's Paradox, which is the side-scrolling octopus game that we saw last year sometime, I think. It's doing a little Metal Gear tribute in it that they announced along with the Metal Gear stuff, which looks fun and ridiculous and cool. But it also is coming like in a month and a half or something like that. And so a lot of stuff is coming out soon. Some of the bigger things we don't have release dates for, but big stuff in there. I will mention one thing that wasn't shown here, but did get a release date. We'll see if it sticks, is Insomniac's Wolverine game, which is maybe my most anticipated game on the calendar right now. September 15th is the release date that they are teasing for.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Notable in that it's a couple months before GTA 6. And if they miss that release window, they are not releasing it alongside GTA 6.
I
think most likely we will see Wolverine next year.
Can I be totally honest and say I don't believe we're going to see GTA 6?
Oh, yeah, that's fair, too.
Seriously, I expect them to say in July, this ain't...
Yeah,
this ain't happening. I don't know if it's Rockstar. I just don't know.
Yeah, I think you are right on the money there. And it is a testament to how much a single game can affect the industry that every other game that is supposed to come out this year is trying to navigate around that game. And that game moving screws up the release calendar for everything. And if GTA doesn't come out in October or whenever it's supposed to, like, holiday games are going to be really weird. It's going to be very, very strange.
So
everybody is trying to figure out how they don't get sucked into the black hole of everybody playing GTA.
So can we have just a really, really fast GTA discussion? Because I posted, I don't know if you saw, on X, I posted a little hot take about how GTA, I know because it's Rockstar, is going to be really, 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 really good. But as good as it could possibly be, I'm not sure that it's going to be on the level that Cyberpunk is on. And yes, I know they're two separate games, two perspectives. I get all of that. I understand all of that. But I have this creeping feeling that Rockstar has been really good with GTA since they started. 3 was good, 4 was good, 5 very good, 6 is supposed to be the greatest game of all time. Like, I have this icky, creeping feeling that, like, man, if it's not, if they have a Cyberpunk sort of issue, yeah, where it just doesn't work. Like, Cyberpunk is one of the greatest packages ever made right now, but it took them almost 5 years to get there.
Yep.
And so I am not under any illusions that Grand Theft Auto 6 doesn't have the possibility of coming out and being a total dumpster fire. And if it is, that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, GTA dominates the discussion no matter what. Like, the black hole-ness of GTA doesn't depend on whether or not it's great or terrible. It's going to happen either way, right? Like,
yeah,
there's no getting around that. And so it's not everybody's banking on GTA being great and thus are trying to navigate around it. Everybody is banking on GTA taking up all of the gaming oxygen in the world. And that is almost guaranteed. Whenever it launches, yeah, regardless of what that game is, it will at least for a certain amount of time, much like Cyberpunk did. Cyberpunk took up all the gaming oxygen around that release in 2020 or whatever it was that Cyberpunk came out initially. Like, it just was the thing, and the thing ended up being, this is a really broken release of what looks like a really promising game, which did indeed become a fantastic game, but it took it a while. GTA may be that, may be terrible, may be fantastic, may be something else, but in the same way, it doesn't matter. It's just going to suck up everything into its vortex. And so if you're trying to release a game alongside it, you just can't, like, all the attention is going to be gone. And it's right. The bigger question is, how long does that last? Like, what's the window of GTA-centric coverage? Is it 2 months? Is it 6 months? Is it 3 weeks? Is it, you know, like, how you're trying to navigate around that. So Insomniac trying to hit a target date of like 2 months before that launches seems wise, because at least you can get a user base in place. But if you miss it, like, then you're saying, okay, like, how far out are we looking? Or if Rockstar announces in June that this is now a 2027 game, which again would not be remotely surprising, Insomniac goes, whew, we're moving to February, you know, like, and everybody goes, yeah, no, that makes sense. And we all get it, even though they won't ever say it in those terms, but that's kind of where we're at. So yeah, it's fascinating what that game means to the industry as a whole. It's going to be crazy when it releases. So shifting gears to the other big story that we have from this week is this basic just upheaval of leadership at Xbox. This all happened seemingly very quickly and is still kind of developing, and we're trying to figure out the all the details around this. So first big bit of news is Phil Spencer has retired. Like, done. He's gone. And that was announced
as of, like, Monday.
Yeah, Monday was his last day, yeah. Which is crazy to say, because Phil Spencer just seems like such a staple in, like, the gaming world, and specifically with Xbox and everything else. And, like, he's retired now. Go live your best life, Phil. Like, nothing wrong with that. Like, dude is legit a gamer. And so, hey, if you got more time to game and travel, whatever, like, he's got money, he's doing fine. Like, live that life, man.
And I do want to talk about him being a gamer, because that's a lot of the discussion. Yes.
So we'll get more into that here in just a second, because that's going to tie into everything else. But just a couple of the other kind of moving pieces here. There has been speculation about Phil retiring for quite a while. And so that, while like kind of seemed pretty sudden, isn't all in all a surprise. Like, there had been kind of seemingly a succession plan being put in place for a while. And that succession plan seemed to be revolving around Sarah Bond, who is the president and has been pretty visual. What am I trying to say there? Has been seen.
She's been very public.
In their you know, promos and their events and that kind of stuff. And is also a gamer, probably not to the level that Phil is, because Phil's a sicko in some ways, but like also known kind of inside Microsoft as being like gamer centric and being that kind of stuff. She is not going to be the next lead of Xbox. In fact, she is also out. She resigned. Whether or not that was a choice on her part, or it might have been a choice because she wasn't going to get Phil's job. It might have been a choice because she wanted to, whatever, it doesn't matter. It might not have been a choice. She might have been told, like, you can resign or we can let you go. And so she took the resign option. But she is not with Xbox anymore either. New lead, and I gotta find her name here.
Asha Sharma is her name. Yeah.
Asha Sharma is the new lead, and then Matt Booty is gonna be kind of the number two. Asha Sharma comes from the AI division. She has been the chief of core AI, and before that was at Meta with their AI stuff.
Yeah.
And so that, just saying that out loud, scares the tar out of me.
Yeah.
Matt Booty is a little bit more established in the gaming space and all that kind of stuff. But Asha Sharma is not, as far as anybody can tell, a gamer into video games now. Obviously getting there now, trying to catch up.
That has changed this week. Right. Like, if you're paying attention on X, which I've spent a lot more time on X recently because I've been paying for it and playing around with Grok 420, we can talk more about that, because I'm really amazed at what it is capable of. But if she's been posting and I've got a gamer tag and we're having it, but okay. Look, can I just say that her whole thing up to this point feels like she's running a PR playbook.
Yes.
And I think 100%. That's what scares the tar out of you, because all of this feels like, to steal a phrase from one of our favorite people, Michael Wilbon, all of this feels like marketing junk.
Yes.
Like, we don't really know what's going on. And what we are currently seeing has a very strong possibility to be smoke and mirrors. And I don't feel good at all.
Yeah. So several questions, obviously, about all this that we don't have answers to. We have been talking about for quite a while of Xbox feeling like it's kind of trying to figure out what it is, right? Is it Game Pass? Is it hardware? Is it both of those things still? Is it a publisher primarily? Like what is the business model of Microsoft? And Microsoft or Xbox as a business has been doing okay. It's not like it's been completely falling apart or anything like that. The hardware sales are you know, pathetic.
In the toilet.
Yeah, just terrible. But they have established that they're not simply a hardware company at this point, and that, like, Forza, and you can see in the video on the show notes, they talk about this. Forza sold, like, gangbusters on PlayStation.
5 million copies on PlayStation.
Crazy on PlayStation, right?
Yeah.
And Microsoft gets that money, you know, or at least a big chunk of that money. Not all that money, obviously. But like, that's a Microsoft game that is selling gangbusters on PlayStation because people have PlayStations and people don't have Xboxes at this point. And so whether or not they continue being a hardware company, whether they just are a software company, whether or not they continue being this service-oriented company with Game Pass has been a big question. And it feels like Microsoft kind of got tired of that being a question without, like, direction and wanted to move. But we still don't know what the direction is.
Can I be honest and say I don't think they do either?
I don't think they do. That's the thing. So Asha has mentioned stuff about, going back to the core focus of like, the Xbox community and talked about new hardware. To me, like, I feel like that is more, like, the third-party licensing kind of hardware focus of, like, the Asus ROG kind of thing. Like, I could easily see that being the future of Xbox hardware.
I mean, for kind of, it's not the same thing, but, I think what they want is essentially a Steam machine.
Right.
They want somebody to give them a Steam machine.
The leaks about the new Xbox, whatever the next gen Xbox is essentially it's a, you know, gaming PC. Like, it's a gaming centric PC, but it'll have access to multiple storefronts. So, like, you could get games off Steam or other places that you're not relegated to the Xbox ecosystem. Which, if true, is great, fine, whatever. Like, I don't have a problem with that, but I also have a PC, you know? Like, I don't need that.
See, that's,
and
that's...
why does Microsoft need to make that product? You know, again, right. When they can license that brand, like, it just seems like that's the direction that it would go, because they've already set the precedence for that with this handheld that is an Xbox, because they have this whole branding thing that this is an Xbox and this is an Xbox. Your TV is an Xbox. Your whatever, you know, your PlayStation is an Xbox at this point, whatever. This is where they may be making a big shift and going, that branding idea was a really bad idea. But how do you take that branding idea of this is an Xbox and then go, by the way, we're making a new Xbox? And you're like, what does that mean? You just told me everything's an Xbox.
Well, I don't know whether they decided that idea is crap or not, because... I you have not been to my parents' house yet. I hope you get to go there this summer and we get to do a little work. But in my room at my parents' house is a new TV that I did not purchase. A cheap LG TV that they just sort of put up because my dad got his knee replaced last week.
Nice.
And he's actually sleeping in my bed for reasons that I don't totally understand. But he's been spending a lot of time on that TV. I had to do some of the setup for that. And I noticed as I'm going through the menus that there is the ability to play Xbox games on that TV, which... it is a low-end piece of hardware. No offense to my dad and my brother. I can tell when I use it that there is not enough processor in this television. And so if you play games on that, it's going to almost have to be cloud-based. It's not
It's
not going to work well at all. And so... I wonder if they think that was a bad idea or they're just trying to find somebody to market it better and convince people, yeah, we want you to go streaming, which feeds into the fact that there's no hardware anywhere. Like, you and I, somebody will have to take our PCs out of our cold, dead hands. And I don't know what we're going to have to do to keep them running, but I'm not giving up my PC. That said, we may have to sell a kidney to buy hardware.
Yeah.
And so if hardware continues to be a problem, and I think it will for at least the near future, Microsoft looking at this with Game Pass and with everything else going, we got to get these people streaming.
Yeah,
and yeah.
Let me run with that, because I you are leading right to where my kind of hypothesis about a lot of this is at, and this isn't something that I've seen explicitly stated, but it feels, again, to me, in my kind of worldview of all this, of the most likely kind of explanation for specifically why Asha Sharma was picked for this position and kind of where they're going, and I think that relies heavily on streaming. So the big kind of weird part of this is, why are we bringing somebody from AI over to the gaming division? And there's another theory about this we'll talk about here in just a second. I want to save that one for just a second. Yeah. But my theory, working theory on this is, it's not about bringing heavy AI workflows into game development, which is a different conversation. She specifically said one of their priorities is not to have AI slop as part of games, and that's true. She did not specifically say we don't want AI assistance in game making, which is coming as going to be a thing. And we
it has to be a thing. I mean,
it already is.
Look,
like,
I'm going to tell you right now.
But let me finish this thought before we get into that thought. But like, that's a conversation that is going to continue around the world of gaming, and she's obviously going to be a central character in that. But I think that part of what she is likely pretty well schooled in, educated about, is not just how to deal with AI models, but how to deal with AI infrastructure, which is where all that hardware you just talked about is going, to these giant data centers that are generating all of this content that everybody is getting from ChatGPT or Claude or Grok or whatever it is. Like, all that's happening at a warehouse out in the desert or in, you know, wherever. We're building these things all over the place.
We have one here. We have one, Claude.
Yeah, like, they're everywhere. It is as cheap as they can find space and utility, whatever. Like, all that stuff is happening. If Microsoft's focus going forward is everything is an Xbox, and so much of that requires streaming and requires cloud access, that is going to be massive amounts of infrastructure that they're already building and using for their own AI purposes. But putting gaming on the back of that is where it's felt like for a long time a lot of the future of gaming is going. We've been talking about this for years and years and years on this show, and we can talk about why it's not there yet or whatever, but like, that's the direction we've been going. She could be someone that ushers in that next era of like streaming gaming stuff, of making it continue to make it more like legit and approachable and easily accessible, and having that back-end infrastructure that supports that, because that's technologically the world that she comes from. Whether or not that matters at all for why she was hired for this position, I don't know. But that's a thing that makes sense to me if that's the direction that they're going. We have no idea the direction that they're going, because they're not telling us any of that. But that would be a reasonable read into why an AI person who is not a gamer is brought in to lead this. Now, to be clear, Phil, who is notoriously a gamer, has been at the head of Xbox through Game Pass price increase, terrible console sales, whatever, and the shifting of what Xbox is. And so, like, love Phil, and I don't think that a lot of problems of Xbox are even necessarily problems A, but B, totally his fault. But if they are shifting, which is what it looks like they're doing here, like, they've got to have that direction of what they're trying to do, because they haven't communicated that effectively yet.
And our guys at IGN, I sent you this video specifically because I wanted you to hear it. Damon Hatfield would sort of kind of seems like he's turning into the senior guy over there in a lot of ways, who I said before I really like, has talked about, talked a lot about the fact that for everything that Phil did that was good, something bad happened. There was always some catastrophe around the corner. And after hearing him talk about this, I think, and I don't know Phil, you don't know Phil, like, this we're not the guys that know Phil,
right?
But I get the impression that Phil really is a gamer. Phil loves this stuff. Mm-hmm. And what Phil struggled with was the corporate crap that comes with this stuff, just like you and I would struggle with the corporate crap that comes with this. Part of the reason I love Valve, because they're not super corporate. I mean, they are, but they're not. And so I think that was a lot of his problem. I think she is very corporate.
Yeah, the way that she's communicated thus far, at least, implies that. So we'll have to see. I mean, it's kind of wait and see how this works out. And there have been successful executives that have come in from other industries. They talked about Peter Molyneux or
Bobby Kotick was there,
I don't want to give Bobby Kotick any credit for anything.
Because it's like...
Like, he to me is the example of how it's terrible.
Right, like, what... That, and that's the thing. What is your definition of success?
Right.
Right? And like...
To be fair...
He got rich.
Yep.
That's what he got.
He made a lot of people a lot of money, including himself. And if that's the purpose... Then great, and has overseen the release of some amazing games, and has also had a lot of controversy surrounding him and all that kind of stuff in his reign, and a whole different thing. But yes, it is. I am really fascinated to see who, first of all, is leading the next Xbox event, because it's not going to be Phil or Sarah. So who else do we get up there to be talking about this stuff?
It's gonna be. What's his face?
Matt Booty.
It's going to be Matt.
Yeah, I think so too. He's going to be that person. That's kind of I think they're calling him the chief content officer, I think is his official title. And so I think that's fine. The other, the theory going about that Seamus Blackie made headlines in an interview about that he thinks, Blackie thinks that the hiring of Asha Sharma is to sunset the Xbox brand. That essentially, Microsoft is just ready to move on from it. AI is the future. That's where they're going. And so we're going to slowly and gently kind of put this to rest. And if, this is me reading between the lines a little bit, but, they can't sell off, all the publishing or whatever, that kind of stuff. Maybe they do some of that stuff still. But, as a big gaming brand, Microsoft's ready to move on from that because they don't see that as the future of their business. I would just love your thoughts on that theory. And then I don't yet see that as the viable path forward, but I could be wrong.
So here's the thing. And the video that I sent you, the guy, I don't even know the guy's name, the video that I was watching, but he sort of kind of played it off. His opinion was that maybe Seamus was right, maybe he wasn't, but he kind of played him as, crazy old man that's grumpy, get off my lawn, I hate corporate bullshit, basically. And I got the opposite feeling. As I was kind of watching this and as I've sort of been reading, I think Seamus might be right, because every single company on the planet is going headlong into AI.
Yeah.
Every single company, because there's so much money, and we can debate about whether the money is real or not. I tend to be of the opinion that they're all just handing each other money, and eventually it's going to crash and it's going to be really, really, really bad, unless you're one of, a handful of guys like Elon, for example, that has three different companies and is trying to build something with those three different companies. Like him or not, it's clear that he's trying to do something and make it so that he has the infrastructure that no matter what happens, he's going to be one of those people, right? And so I see there's a serious potential for a crash coming, and not like a crash, like the gaming industry is going to die. I'm just saying, I see it realistically as Microsoft saying, we're making so much money on AI. Why do we need this? Like, and NVIDIA's doing a lot the same way. Like, we love NVIDIA. They're great cards. But let's be honest. They're like, we're making so much money selling these graphics cards to whoever for AI. We're just going to give the gamers a middle finger for a little while because we need to fulfill these contracts and make money. And we're just going to bank on the fact that gamers are addicts and they'll be there when we come back and we can have a whole other discussion about the NFL. I've heard the same thing about the NFL after the Super Bowl and the halftime show and all of that. Like, we can do whatever we want because the people consuming our products are addicts and they're not going anywhere. So if we choose to, whatever we choose to do, they're going to be there. And I'm kind of getting that feeling. I really am, because like, where are we going to go? Like, where are we, if this is what you do,
right?
If this is our hobby, and they tell us, you're going to take streaming and you're going to like it, and we're going to take all your hardware and make it so that you can't build something, and we're going to make it so you can't do anything other than stream, and you're going to like it, and we're going to make money. Like, I'm feeling that way.
I don't disagree on the kind of outcome. I don't know that I agree on the, like, you're going to take your medicine and you're going to like it kind of approach to it. I think it's a demand and consumer preference thing. Like, I think consumer preference is going to have to drive that. Because, like, hardware is more expensive. Prices of, like, the PlayStation haven't come down. We've seen a price increase on PlayStation. Right. Xbox. Like, that's a problem. That ties in directly with AI and the need for memory and graphics cards and all that kind of stuff for that to work, which we've talked about a ton. So, yes, there is this tension in the industry right now that I don't know how long that lasts. If there is demand for consoles, they're going to make consoles, right? And, like, we're seeing that, like, that demand may be indeed shrinking at this point, that people are not going, I have to have a console to do this. I have my phone, or I have whatever, you know. Switch 2 sales, while have been solid, haven't been quite what Nintendo had anticipated. Xbox sales, we talked about. PlayStation is doing good as far as, like, competition-wise goes. But I guarantee you Sony would say that they would have preferred to sell more consoles. The thing that there isn't less of is gaming content, right? Like, you can go find games. There's games everywhere. Now, whether or not it's the game you want or the game that you're, like, looking for, that one specific thing, on a granular level, there may be places that you can complain about that. But on a macro level, like, we have games. Games aren't going anywhere. Games are distributed enough through the kind of technological sphere that they are going to endure in some capacity or whatever. And one company doesn't have the ability to, like, make that decision of yes or no, here's how you get your
right.
content.
But see, that's the thing. It's not one company. They are all selling this stuff to each other and passing money around.
Oh, sure.
And getting, like, it's a cyclical thing.
But again, right now the money is in AI. And I argue that AI is way more likely to be a bubble than gaming is. Gaming's been around for 50 years, 60 years.
Yeah.
You know
agreed.
What I'm saying?
1,000%.
Like, a year from now, we could see the AI bubble burst and like all this hardware all of a sudden is really accessible and a whole lot cheaper, and gaming is going through a boom and the economy tanks because all of our money right now is going into this infrastructure and everything else.
I believe you're 1,000% right. That's probably what's going to happen. But the thing is, what nobody really knows, and what you and I don't know, is do we have, like, I think we'll get to a point where 60 90s are actually reasonable and people can make consoles again and all of that. But the question is that a year from now? Is that 2 years from now? Is that 5 years from now?
What does the rest of the economy look like? Because it doesn't matter if they're cheaper if everybody is jobless. Yeah, that's going to get to a whole different conversation. But that's the risk of these big tech bubbles, which we've seen happen before 25 years ago. We had a big tech bubble that we had a big issue with. There are a lot of reasons to take some fear from that, a lot of reasons to say the current situation is different. But it's like, it is all tied together when we're talking about the same, you know, components being used for this stuff. And that's, you know, Microsoft's not immune to that. Sony's not immune for that. One of the things we're not going to talk about is in the show notes, gamingcenter.com, because we got to wrap up soon. Steam, Valve is talking about the Steam hardware, the new Steam machine and the frame, about they wanted to already have a release date and price announced.
But they can't.
They don't have either. Yeah. And a reason that they're giving for that is hardware shortages, that they just can't get the stuff. They don't know what the end cost is going to be. They don't want to say a price that they can't adhere to. And they don't know when they're going to have enough units ready. And so they're still saying they're shooting for first half of this year. But, I mean, it's into February. Like, that's coming up pretty quick. But they are saying directly that's because of supply shortage, because of these issues that we're talking about. And that, I don't know, like, so, what the answer to that's going to be. Again, unless it's Microsoft saying it's not that all this, all these components don't exist. They do exist. They just exist in these giant databases. And so we're going to shift our focus to that instead of it existing in a box in your house. I don't know.
So
but that's where I go on that kind of thing, as opposed to the sun setting thing, which is what got us all on this in the first place.
So you're right. And I just want to bring this up real quick. I know we got to wrap, but I and you and I haven't talked a lot since we did the last show. So I don't know where you're at on this. Feel free to jump in, but I'm looking at my Google tabs right now as I look at your face, and I have no less than 3 different AIs open. Okay, yeah. Paying for Grok, paying for ChatGPT, and I'm trying to decide right now. I'm on a free trial of Gemini with 2 terabytes of drive space, which is ridiculous, and they're charging $20 a month. And so, like, I'm probably going to be paying for all 3. And for despite everything that we just said, I can tell you right now, the reason that I'm paying that money is that AI is making my life for creating stuff for this show. You know how limited I am with some things, with some typing and some different things. It's changing the way that it's changing my workflow. It's allowing me to write blogs. It's doing different things. I can go to Grok or ChatGPT or anybody and say, look, here's my idea. Here's what I'm doing. You know what my voice needs to be, and you know what I'm going to change if you say it, so don't say this. And it is literally changing the way that I am able to create content. So all of that to say, I'm not down on AI. I don't really know where you're at. I think at least right now it's great. It may cause the end of the world. it may all burn. But like I'm into it because it's helping me do what I want to do, and I'm curious as to what you think.
I have a more complicated relationship with AI at this point. I think I've mentioned this before on the show. I have a side gig that is helping train AI models that is doing different work just on a kind of contract basis of talking to AI models for different things. And
you and I need to talk about that because I'm kind of thinking maybe I need to get into that.
For sure. It's great. It's just like decent, steady work, first of all. But also like the fact that like I enjoy like getting to explore this technology in a different way and getting to understand it. There are things that it's absolutely great for. There's things that I'm really worried about the impact that it's going to have on careers, my own included, and on society. And so that's one of the reasons that I'm like, I want to know what's going on with this. I want to be as, you know, little or as much as I can a part of trying to help it be better, because it's inevitable at this point. I worry in creative spaces of the work that I do, be it music or video creation, that kind of stuff, the work of video game development, that kind of stuff. There are so many easy pathways to get something that is workable, that is less quality than a person at this point would do. Yep. And for like true artistic expression, it is not human, right? No, like, I mean, that's just like,
it's not
saying that out loud is so weird, but it's so necessary too. Like, it doesn't have the human experience that creates good art. And one of my biggest fears about AI is that it is warping our appreciation of human created expression. And that manifests in video games, that manifests in music, that manifests in visual arts, that manifests all over the place. And just, again, AI slop being everywhere at this point. Yep. And just being so predominant. This is one of the places that I'm like, I hope this is a bit of a bubble. I don't want it to be a total bubble, because, again, that has some really, really terrible side effects for the world economy. But I hope it's a bit of a bubble in that there is a fad element to this that will come and go. And there is a really useful application of this that will maintain, that will be useful and work alongside human professionals, human creatives, to continue to do work and art and that kind of stuff, and will not become a thing that just creates mediocre slop content that we go on and scroll on Facebook or social media.
1,000%. And you have not commented at all on any of the stuff that I have put out. I am working really hard to make sure that if I create something with AI, it's not crap.
Sure.
And you and I have known each other long enough that if you hear something, especially in regards to this show or in regards to something else that I'm doing, I hope that you will call me and say, look, man, I understand, but that's crap.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I'm paranoid about, you know, the thing about me is, you and I have known each other 20 years. I'm a creator. You're a creator. Yep. We love to create. And like, my mind is like, and I don't intend to go here because we're out of time, but like, my mind, in a lot of ways, since we've known each other and before that, has been in a box, because I got all the stuff I want to do. I got all the stuff I want to build, but I don't physically have the wherewithal to do it well, whether it's fine motor skills or just not having the mental capability to do math or whatever it is.
Sure.
I like having the assistant and like having the help to create logos or blog posts or whatever, but I have no desire to create crap.
Yes. I think that's going to be the eternal struggle of AI. Right. Is that how do we leverage it to make what we do better as instead of replacing what we do? Yeah. And that's, again, coming right back to gaming. That's going to be a huge point of discussion. So we don't have to have the whole discussion today, because it's going to be continuous, because it's already a big deal. Claire Obscure got removed from consideration for what I remember what it was in our break because of their use of AI generated content in it, which is a conversation to have. I'm not weighing a judgment either way on that. We've talked how much we love that game. But there is a conversation to be had about that that is going to continue, is going to exist in the gaming space, aside from all the hardware issues, which is also going to continue and exist in the gaming space. And so we've got all that to talk about down the road. Really quickly, I'll mention, trying to think if there's anything. Summer Game Fest is back. No surprise there. But 1st of June, June 5th is when Summer Game Fest starts off, kicks off this year. So good just to know that that's there. Again, not a surprise. But good to know. We're in kind of a drought of releases. Not a lot of big releases right now. I'm just looking through to see if there's anything. Avowed is out on the PS5. Speaking of Xbox games coming to PlayStation, Avowed is out. Maybe we'll see it get a renewed interest on the PS5. I was trying to see if that God of War game. There it is. God of War, Sons of Sparta. 65 currently on Metacritic. Ugh. So not the best. Mario Tennis Fever for Switch 2 people. 77, which again, for a Mario Tennis game, is probably about where you expect it to be. Mugenix, which is a game I don't know anything about, but the name's got me fascinated. It has an 88.
Something new with cows?
Cats. Cats. Cows. And, okay. I am very curious about Mugenix. What a good naming on their part. So yeah, Resident Evil 7 Biohazard on the Switch has an 87. So the Switch ports doing decently well for whatever that's worth. But yeah, not a whole lot of stuff coming out right now.
Yeah, which I think is good. Like you said, I think everybody's waiting to see what happens with Grand Theft Auto. We got the summer sort of spring, like this is a dead zone, let's be real honest. And we've probably got another month of like decent releases, and then summer stuff starts and it's going to be dead for a little while, which is okay because we got 8,000 things to play at this point.
Yeah.
But It's going to be a really interesting few months, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And few years and few decades or whatever else at this point with gaming, because it's going to be a lot going forward. So yeah. Anyway.
With all that said, we got to get out of here. We are running late because I talk too much.
Well, we had a lot to talk about. It was a good show.
We do. We got a lot to talk about, and we could go for a whole lot longer because there's a whole lot more to this discussion. We're not going to. If you would like to get involved, you can send us a voicemail at
509-GAME-210.
Also, gamingunscensored@gmail.com. We do answer that. We are paying attention. We have a segment in the queue.
We see you, Cabbage.
We are going to play that next show.
It'll tie in really nicely with all of our GTA discussion about video game hype. So,
yes. Yeah.
Little tease to look forward to next time.
Yes, absolutely. So we got that coming up. If you want to send us a segment, please do that. If you haven't made it over to the Discord, you've got to go over there because that's where all the fun stuff's happening. Sam, because of what he sent me, I was able to send you. We've got some games that we're working with because of Sam and everybody else at Discord. Just a really great community over there. And of course, the Patreon page. I am speaking of AI and different things. I am trying to create some more content to go up there that will fit in with what we're doing here. So if you are not a patron, it's a good time to become one. Because I'm going to be real honest, we're going to need your money. So please, please, if you haven't been over there, please go check that out. Other than that, is there anything else, sir?
I think we're good.
All right, I'm Jamie. That's Tommy. We are Gaming Uncensored, and we are out.
Would you like to submit a segment for the show? Send it to gamingandcensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.